Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, getting the show back out on the road all week long. It is our 27th anniversary. I swear Jessica's going to get the new 27th cupcake up to replace our oyster. Not doing any cupcakes this month, I don't think. Maybe the Orioles are the only cupcake in town this month for out of town teams. But I will be doing my 27 favorite things to eat this month to honor our 27 years here at WNST. I will also have scratch offs in the Maryland Lottery, the whammy and pressure luck, as well as the lucky sevens doubler, just to tide us over from home run riches to get ready for the Ravens scratch off and Ravens season. Luke is in Owings Mills. Luke will be down at the ballpark watching last place baseball. The bananas were pretty good over the weekend. All that's going on, but the baseball season churns on with, I don't know. I was in Costas on Sunday. Guy knocked in a run, and everybody's like, yeah, or who's that guy? And it's like August, and when you're in last place, this happens. So we're up in Philadelphia this week. Taking on the Phillies, I had Micah Buchdahl on, my pal Robbie Insmakowski, who grew up in the shadows of Veterans Stadium, and Harry Callis and all that good stuff that went on. This guy's written a book on the Phillies, and when I had an opportunity to have him on, I'm like, you know, probably doesn't know that I was a Phillies fan as a kid or how many times I piled into my 1977 Caprice Classic wagon to go up to see Fernando Mania or to see Dwight Gooden pitch whenever the National League would come in because, you know, National League, American League, they went to, you want to see Steve Carlton? You want to see Michael Jack Schmidt? You had to get in your car. You had to go up to Broad and Patterson. So I have a long history with the Phillies. I even have my Daddy-O hat from 1981 that I had when I saw Manny Trio and Bob Boone and Gary Maddox and Sarge do their thing staying at the Stadium Hilton back in 81. I welcome Kevin Reavy in. The book is Ring the Bell, How the Philadelphia Phillies Built Baseball's Fan Base. He is a fan, as they say, like a real fan. He did a little turn on the radio in country music of all things. I'm glad you gave that gig up, dude. I'm an MMR guy, Jackie Bam Bam, as well as you know, as Pierre Robert. How are you? What's it feel like to have a competitive summer of baseball and to still be wiping the grease off of greasing the poles there for the football team this year, huh?
It's always great. I mean, you know, the Eagles gave us a great season, and that's all well and good. Big Eagles guy. But there's nothing like competitive baseball in the summertime. It gives you something to do, something to cheer for, to root on, gives you a little pep in your step. And certainly when the Phillies have been down, and they've been down many times in the team's history, it's a rain cloud over the summer. And we've had enough of those as it is. So we don't need more. And I got to say, right off the top, the whole food thing you were talking about, I'm a big food guy. I got my minor league frozen pizza hat here. Actually, this isn't the frozen pizza, the other pizza hat.
I wouldn't eat that piece of pizza on your hat. I would
I
not eat it.
collect, well, this isn't my favorite, but it's a Philly thing. I collect all kinds of minor league food hats. Food is my thing. Food, beer, you
All
know.
right, let's see if you let me see if you get your man card from Philly, all right? Does that pizza that on your hat, is that cheese on there or is that tomato sauce you put on bread and call like
Right.
what the hell is that? What is it? Tomato, what do you call it? Tomato bread.
And tomato pie is what it's usually called,
Tomato
but
pie. What is
I'm not a
that?
big fan. Sometimes the cheese will be underneath. Sometimes it's grated Parmesan on top, but it's mostly tomatoes. Not a huge fan, but in minor league pizza hats, there's very few that are this is as good
That's
as
a
it
good
gets.
pizza hat. I mean, it looks a little Detroit, little deep dish. I like that. That's nice. That's fun. I'd eat
You know,
that.
this is as good as it gets
I want to tell
as
you
far as
this,
the minor league food hats go.
rolling this out before we even get to the Phillies and how old you are and whether you remember Michael Jack Schmidt or Steve Carlton and Pete Rose and like all that good goodness that I squeezed out when the fanatic was the real fanatic back in the day when he pissed off Tommy Lasorda. That was the good stuff. But the whole Philadelphia thing, I'm kicking off my tour. I'm going to be in your great state this evening seeing the Crows of Black in the little town of Bethlehem. And on my way back, I'm detouring to start the entire tour, day 27, my 27th favorite thing to eat. So I don't want you getting too big-headed, you Philly guys. Although there will be a cheesesteak on this in the top 10, I'll say that.
That's
And
great.
it's tourist because it's going to have lettuce and tomato and stuff that you guys wouldn't have. It's not any whiz and wit and all that with you. But I'm enamored with Philly pretzels. And the Philly Pretzel Company, the chain, has one in Bel Air. And if I'm within 6 to 8 miles of the store and it's open, they're getting $5 from me and I'm getting three of them hot out of the oven. Because the Philly pretzel, I should at least begin this and make nice with you Philly people before
Right.
we get into that Eagle Raven thing or whatever we do here. I'm a Philly pretzel guy going back to seeing Schmidt play, seeing Carlton pitch, driving up there, fake carpet, all, the spectrum. I went to concerts. There was never a time, and I lived in East Baltimore. I was an Eagles season ticket holder during the whole Buddy Ryan, Rich Kotite era, late 80s. I sat in section 721 for every Eagles game, all of that, Randall Cunningham era, all of that, Baldinger, the whole deal. I don't ever remember coming up there and not having a pretzel from a kid on a cart at in the car on the way. A lot of times I wouldn't eat anything at the Vet or whatever, or even a Spectrum. They had good ice cream cones at the Spectrum, but I would always get a pretzel and I would eat it going across the bridge that stinks on the way back to Wilmington. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah.
So pretzels to me in Philly, that's the thing for me, food wise.
Oh, it's great. And I don't understand the Philly Pretzel Factory business model. It always seemed like it's got to be a money laundering operation because you can get like 30 pretzels for $5. I don't know how it works. I don't know how they turn a profit. Something's going on there, but I guess
It's a
it's
sides, they
just
upsell you into the cheese and the little
right.
sauces as they do. Yeah.
They upsell with the hot dogs inside and all the fancy stuff. But if you
I don't
just
need any of
want,
that. I just need pretzels.
right, it's great food. I'm a
I don't
fan.
even, not even a little guy, just pretzels. All right. So your baseball team in your book. The fandom of the Phillies for me. I was born into baseball in 68. My cousin's a Hall of Famer. I remember most things from 72 on, 73 for sure. And I think of the Phillies in the mid to late 70s as being very good. They drew well along with the Dodgers. Pirates and the Reds had great teams. The Reds were great at that time. And then the 80 Phillies, I remember, I quote Tug McGraw about he's going to waste 90% of his money on Irish women, Irish whiskey and women, and the other 10 wasted. And so I remember the Phillies of 80. I remember George Brett's hemorrhoids. Obviously, 83, I have a very close, I should have worn my Sisto Lescano bubble pea blue from the 83 World Series that I have. It was my favorite player. I rooted for the Phillies. My dad took me up there in 1981 during the strike year. I saw Nolan Ryan pitch, and it was everything Baltimore wasn't, right? We had a real stadium and grass and Brooks Robinson and Eddie Murray and like all that. Philly had fake grass. You could see center field. It was circled in. It was National League, so like they played the Dodgers and the Mets and teams we couldn't see. So the Phillies were like this exotic girlfriend I had that was an hour and a half away. And once I got a car and I could come up and see Rush play there, see concerts, the Phillies were my, like, I would say my second team. They became like, I went to as many Phillies games as Orioles games when they were good and the Orioles stunk in the late 80s. And then we got stolen from our football team. I got divorced at 16 from my football team. And I didn't adopt the Eagles, but I went up there a lot. So I've seen the Phillies fan base kind of come and go, and the Eagles and the toughness of the Phillies fans, and been a million Flyers games, Sixers, Dr. J, Chocolate Thunder, all of that. The Phillies to me have really done something in this century to become a franchise that someone like you would write a book about how enduring they are and how they've given the city a chance to win in a way that they always didn't when Curt Schilling came around.
Yeah, and that's the one thing I talk about in the book, and I've been saying, during this whole time, it's since it's come out, is the best way I describe Philly fandom is like a family. And it's kind of a maybe a little bit of a corny way to describe it, but it's the best way that I can describe how a team that has lost the most games in the history of Major League Baseball could be this close with its fan base. Because it is like if you have a brother who's just like a drunk or a drug addict, but you still love them. And there's a way that the Phillies have found a way to keep a tie with their fan base in that way through bad, through good. I think sometimes apathy can set in on the good side and bad side with the Braves, a little bit of apathy there. I don't think their fan base is as hardcore as Phillies fans, despite the fact that they always win. And then the Pirates would be another side where they can't get it done. They can't put a
Oh, I'm in
competitive
Baltimore,
team.
dude. Stop. I mean,
Yeah.
I got 83 and I can, do all of that on a Philly guy, but we
Right,
ain't
for
got
sure.
anything. We ain't gonna win anything. Built this beautiful
Right.
ballpark down here, nothing. Literally.
And what's funny is the 83 chapter is the shortest by far in the book because we got a quote from Glenn Macnow, I think, from the start. I'd have to look into the book and see exactly what the quote was, but it seemed like nobody gave a crap about that team in Philly. They just won the World Series. It took forever just to get there. And
Well,
three
Vermeil,
years later.
they had lost the Super Bowl. Dr. J was, they had the Lakers, the Celtics. I mean, that was a tough time to win. I mean, I love the
All
Sixers.
right.
I love Dr. J, but like I'm hearing what you're saying that where the Phillies were, and look, 2 years later, I'm buying season tickets up there with Buddy Ryan, and you got a winner in town, and Randall Cunningham. All that came to get in the way of the Phillies, right?
Yeah, and it kind of that season kind of came out of nowhere. They had a bunch of older players, mostly from
Oh,
the Reds,
yeah.
and they had just no one really expected that team to win. And in a lot of ways, they didn't expect the team to win in 1980, but at least they were building towards that a little bit, where it was starting to crumble by 83. So we addressed that in the book. We wanted it to be a fun book. We didn't want to have to follow any of the rules. We're okay, they went to the World Series. We have to cover this in the grand scheme. We actually make a joke of it, and we said we're going to cover this chapter in as many words as runs scored that season. So the whole chapter is like 700 and some words long, and we say, you don't care about it all that much. We're not going to talk about it all that much. But it's totally different, I'm sure, for Baltimore because that was a big season for them and they won the whole thing. But it's kind of funny, you can get so close, and if you don't quite get over the hump, it's just all for nothing.
Well, I mean, the Orioles won 101 games 2 years ago, and it might as well be 100 years ago.
Right.
Sort of like, I was out in Kansas City with Luke when the Orioles and the Royals played in the ALCS. And I mean, I should tell you, things were so bad in ball. I mean, dude, I've been on the air 35 years. It's 27 years I've owned the radio station here. So I'm a little bit Howard Eskiny to Baltimore sort of over length of time. And Howard's a good buddy of mine through years of doing this. And watching other towns have fun with baseball. My wife's a Red Sox fan, right? Like she grew up in New Hampshire and they were dogs, right? I mean, Shaughnessy's writing Reverse the Curse and The Curse of the Bambino, and then they just win championships. Schilling was a part of that and Pedro and all of that. Places that have had fun, Pittsburgh has not had any fun at all. Places like Tampa where they've had good baseball, but they play in a blimp and nobody sort of cares about them and there's no history, no lineage. The Braves where they win every year, all the time, but there's no hardcore fanaticism like there is Northeast fanaticism for sports in general, where it's more of a life and death family, been here 100 years and all of that. But the Orioles, things were so bad for the Orioles. My kid was born in 84. We had some mishaps when he was 12 and 13. He got sick one night when I was supposed to take him to a ALCS game against the Yankees, so he never made it to a baseball playoff game. And like, I want to say it was 05-ish in that range that the Phillies finally made a playoff game. They were playing the new stadium. The Orioles hadn't been in the playoffs in a decade. And my kid and I, we were playing the Colorado Rockies in a wild card game. It's an afternoon, like 4 or 5 o'clock game. Weather was beautiful. My kid, I said to him, he's 21 at the time, and this is 20 years ago. I'm like, get in the car. I'm going to take you to, like, you may never see a baseball playoff game in Baltimore. Like in your lifetime, you may never see a game. So I took him up there and I have pictures of, I'm wearing my Sisto Lescano jersey up in your upper deck, a little wing out in right field. I paid $100 to get in that day. And scalpers, Philly, how this is before
Oh yeah.
SeatGeek and all that, right? And I took him to a game because I just wanted him to see a baseball playoff game because that's how freaking desperate it is in Baltimore to play one playoff game. And then we make the playoffs the last 2 years. Last year, there's 15,000 empty seats in the upper deck here. $15 to get in. Nobody goes. And when I met the new owner of the Orioles, I told him, I had 30 seconds with me, and you don't care who I am. I said, there's been a lot of trauma here, So while I watch the Red Sox rebuild the left field wall, win championships, load up, big poppy, this and that. Yankees, forget the Yankees. They're like a different planet. But even up in Philly, having fun up there, the Indians have had some fun. Other franchises, forget St. Louis and other places that are more venerable. The Rangers, Astros, they cheated their way to having fun. You guys have had fun. Phillies fans have had, you've won, you've lost, whatever, but you've had fun with baseball. That has been something that has been, our fans have been traumatized here by Peter Angelos, like where there's no chance to win. We had that little period 10, 12 years ago, the Adam Jones Buck era. That was nice. It was fun. Delmon Young, we had a game. But the Phillies have built some memories around all of this and Bryce Harper and stealing the Nationals guy. And there have been about three eras through the Ryan Howard, Chase Utley. People name their dogs after your players, man. Like
Oh, yeah.
it's a real cultural phenomenon to have seen what the Phillies have become the last 25 years. I saw it here last year when Fleet Week, the Phillies came down, the Orioles were really good. It was all Phillies fans. There were 40,000 Phillies fans in the city last year.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, my sister's dog is named Harper. So there you go.
Not
My
Bryce.
Bryce Harper,
Okay.
the man. And, my dog is named Norm after Norm from Cheers. You
Not
know, rest in
Cole after
peace.
Hamels, no.
No, I've got a broad stroke of interests, and beer is certainly one of them. But yeah, it's the secret sauce is it's really all about the Eagles, I would say. That's where it stems from. This Eagles fanaticism and that mentality that once a week you go down to the sports complex, and Citizens Bank Park is right across the street. All the sports teams are in one central area. Once a week you go down and you party and you give it all you got. And that's transformed a little bit into Phillies games, at least big Phillies games. And that's why during the postseason, it gets so intense because they bring that kind of football mentality. And if other cities could start to figure that out and start to like group together, again, it's like a family. It all comes together. When the Phillies are doing well, the Sixers, the Flyers, it becomes an Eagles game. It's just super intense. And you can't, it's a hard thing to make happen in other cities. Like in Pittsburgh, I think they could pull it off. Steelers fans are huge, but they just won't put a quality product on the field. So when everything comes together, like it's coming together for the Phillies right now, it's just a recipe for success. It's a recipe for fanaticism.
Are you a Flyers fan?
I used to be. So
Okay.
I stopped being a Flyers fan. When I went to college in 2001, so I know everything about the Flyers before like 2002. Eric Lindros, John LeClair, even like the Hextall era and all that stuff, but not so much anymore. It is crazy. Like the Flyers fans in town are insane.
Well, that
Like
was
what?
always. Like in the 70s and 80s, the Flyers fans were the rowdy fans. Then the Eagles fans with Santa Claus during my era in the mid 80s, it became that. Phillies games were always sort of genteel, even during the Curt Schilling era and the, that 93 Hollins Kruk era. It wasn't a rowdy crowd. Now, I'll say this to you, bro, because I got a lot of experience in doing this. I've traveled the world, been to a lot of games in a lot of places. You have nailed it when you talk about a football crowd at a baseball game and how it changes things. And where the first time I ever saw that was in Cleveland in 95, 96, 97, that era when the Browns were stolen by them, by us. I remember going out there and when the Orioles played the Indians. It was nasty. It was a football game. And when the Indians got into the World Series against like the Marlins, they played a game against the Red Sox where the Albert Bell was pointing to his muscle and he got into it with Hannah Storm in the dugout. I was at that game, but it was very football crowd, the sounds, the noise. Even it was cold in Cleveland at the World Series, like 40 degrees. So it
Oh,
just
yeah.
had your breath. You know what I mean? It just looked like a football game. And we had one game in the history of Baltimore sports that was like that. And it was after the Ravens had won the first Super Bowl. So Ray Lewis, I don't need to tell you, Ray Lewis's dance before games was incendiary. I mean, rock star, loud, intimidating. Anyone who ever came in and played against the Ravens with Ray Lewis, they would say, Marvin would tell his players, watch him dance because you're seeing something you're never going to see. The stadium, people stopped going to the games after Ray stopped playing because the dance was such a hype. The thing you're talking about, turning it into an Eagles crowd, right? That
Right.
moment when you needed a kickoff for those 3 hours, the Billick era had that in a way that the Lamar era, Lamar doesn't know. I mean, no offense, these kids can go down there and do what they want now, but they don't know. In 2003 and four, when the Red Sox were the big dicks in the world, right? Pedro, they had won the World Series. This was when Pedro and the Yankees with Don Zimmer, they were fighting on the field and all of that was going on. And the Orioles stunk, right? The Orioles were just like no good, right? This was the Sidney Pansone era, literally, right? Like the Orioles were no good. But the Ravens had just won the Super Bowl. The Orioles, I believe, had signed Javi Lopez and Miguel Tejada at that period of time. And the Red Sox came in on an opening day night. It was a Sunday night baseball. Opening night of the season was at Camden Yards, and Pedro pitched against the Orioles. Crowd was gassed up. It was an 8 o'clock. It was a football crowd. It was the place to be. It was all Ravens fans bringing all of that Ray Lewis-ish into Camden Yards on a, at a baseball game. It's
Right.
never happened here. I'm not telling you, dude. I'm 22 years later. It's different. It's a whole bunch of old white folks that are polite that clap when you almost get no hit. They almost got no hit earlier this year, and they gave the guy standing O 8 innings in. That just would not
That's
happen.
brutal.
Yeah, it just wouldn't happen in Philly. It wouldn't happen in Yankee Stadium. It just wouldn't happen. You don't even understand from that.
Right.
And but Ravens fans of yore would never. Like, we didn't let Steelers fans into our section, bro. Like, it was like Ravens fans were nasty 25 years ago. It's become a little more genteel. It's been a little more priced out. The Wembley knee really changed things politically with Trump and whatnot with the fan base. But I know what you're talking about when you can turn a baseball game into a football crowd. Dude, there were 50,000 people yelling, "Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy?" to Pedro Martinez as he walked off the mound in shame in the fifth inning, doing the walk of shame on opening day. Now the team won 71 games, but for that night, I know what you're talking about. And when the Phillies can will that into playoff games and they go to San Diego and they're waving fish tacos at you, or when it's not, it can get very rowdy in Philly, and I know what you're talking about. That's a home field advantage that can't be understated that we do not have in Baltimore in October baseball.
Yeah, I wish sometimes that the fans would bring it more during the regular season. It doesn't happen as often. There are some moments where I'm watching the game and I think to myself, if we could bring the postseason atmosphere to this moment right now, it would work wonders. I remember I went to a game, meaningless game, well over 10 years ago. Jim Thome had just come back. It was one of his last seasons, and it was his first at bat back with the Phillies. And the way the stadium shook, the way the fans were giving him this standing ovation during his entire at bat, I knew for a fact that he's getting a hit. He's going to get a home run or something. And he laced a single down the line. And it was just like, there's no way he wasn't getting a hit. The power that the fans were giving him in that moment, I think about that all the time. And it's not a coincidence that the Phillies have such a great record in the postseason. It's because when it gets going, they just keep it going. And it's a little bit of fuel to help them get over the hump.
You know, I knew Schilling pretty well before he told me to go F myself, and that's fine. And I've spent a lot of time with Curt Schilling and his wife, who was
And
my
he's
best
my
friend.
favorite all-time Philly. I mean, when I
Okay,
had
well.
nothing to root for, I rooted for him to get 300 strikeouts in a season. That's how desperate as a kid I was for something to root for, and it was Curt Schilling more than anything else.
I mean, I remember him drunk on the couch across the street from me because he married my best friend growing up in Dundalk and dealt off Tucson, Philly, the whole Philadelphia era up in Kennett Square where he lived with Chandon, Christmas parties, all his work on behalf of Lou Gehrig. So I can go through. I DJed their wedding, so two out of three ain't bad. It was a great Meatloaf song. So
Great.
I go through all that, but Curt played in Philly during that the ugly guy era with Fregosi. I was up there for all. I went to all those World Series games. I was at Skydome, and the ball landed below me when Carter hit the home run. Every time I see a Blue Jay out the window, I yell Joe Carter at it. And I was wearing a Philly jersey in the upper deck that night with my girlfriend in '93 in Toronto. So I remember all of that, but the pressure on that Phillies team in '93, and you mentioned what made 83 not be loved by that era. And at that point, Buddy Ryan, they hadn't won. The Flyers still haven't won in 50 years now. I got to say that to a Philly guy. I like saying that. But the Sixers had won at that point. The Phillies had won. The Eagles still hadn't won anything at that point. There was pressure on the Phillies, but the kind of guys they had, not just that Dykstra was nuts or that Dutch Dalton and the turf there in Philly and Lord knows whatever else went on, Dave Hollins, those players that played there. But Kurt then went on to Arizona where everybody was asleep. And, you know, went on to Boston where it was a razor's edge with media, fan base, expectations, beat the Yankees, curse of the Bambino. For Bryce Harper to sign up in Philly after the Ryan Howard era and the Utley era, and winning, there's something about how tough the fan base was on him being imported in from Washington. You know, they won down there. We're still having a hard time admitting that in Baltimore that the Nationals won before the Orioles did. We're still trying to win a playoff game around here for the first time in over a decade. There is a point for the Phillies fan base that it is tough. And when you sign up to play there, or you get drafted into it and you're Jalen Hurts, or you embrace it, you know, the way that Kelce has wrapped himself around it, or you rebel it or repel it, or it eats you up as it has a lot of athletes, it's hard being a Philly and signing up for it and getting the biggest contract in the world and not delivering in the early going. It's rougher than being a Yankee in the modern era, I think. It's certainly rougher than being a Red Sox in the modern era. There are only a couple places you can go in baseball where you're under the scrutiny that I'm talking about of Schilling's era, where you feel like the media, the fan base, you'll get booed at home. There aren't a lot of places where they boo. They don't do that in Minnesota. They don't boo the home team at
Right.
Wrigley Field, right? Philadelphia, there's a different. It's a different place to sign up and play and saying, I'll take this on. And I guess that's my point about the Schillings and the Crux and those guys. They had some moxie about them to take that on in the way that Bryce Harper has gone from a cushy congressional seat in Washington to being one of you and losing his razor and everything.
Yeah, I think one of the main things is, I think, well, the key word I think would be culture. And the culture is, especially with the Phillies and Eagles, is when a new player comes in, I think the team, the players do a good job of explaining to them it's not about the name on the back of your jersey. It's always going to be the name on the front. It's always going to be about the Phillies, about the Eagles. I mean, everyone loved Rhys Hoskins. When he came back for his first game, he hit a home run. There were a few fans that were cheering. But there was all the talk on sports talk radio leading up to that game was, are we going to boo Rhys Hoskins? Now, he wasn't even offered a contract. He would have loved to come back, fan favorite. But once you're gone, you're no longer with the team. We'll have the memories, but
Well, that's
as
what
for
the
right
Giants
now,
fans
you're
said
not
about
with the team.
Saquon, right? Like, that's right.
Right, exactly. And I think,
And you learned to love him too. I mean, you've
oh, for
loved your
sure.
enemies around here. I remember when Cordell Stewart signed as a Raven. I mean, Rod Woodson, even to this day, when I see him, it's like, hey, dude, you got your ring here, bro. You know what I mean? I don't want to be seeing that Pittsburgh stuff, but it is, you
Couldn't
know.
stand Bryce Harper. I couldn't stand Bryce Harper when he played for the Nationals, especially when he was just coming up
It's like
and
when
it's
the
this
Orioles
cocky
signed
kid.
Albert Bell. How do I get behind that?
Right. Yeah. And he was a great player. I saw an interview with him recently. He was talking about his play with Fernando Vina knocking him out on the base pads, and it was good to get his perspective on that play. But
Oh,
you know,
Chase Utley's the dirtiest play I've seen in the history of the sport, literally. Right up there
and
with Ray Fosse and Pete Rose, but yeah.
he recently talked about that on a podcast, and I was listening to his explanation. If you listen to him talk about it without seeing the video, you're like, oh, it's just a hard play. But you see the video, and it's like, okay, you're not trying to hurt someone.
Dude, you slid into center field.
But that could really be the only result of the slide that
I
you
was
made.
in Vegas that night. I remember watching it, and I was in a place where there was no sound, there was no commentary on it, and I looked up and I'm like, Mike, he should be thrown out of the sport for that. Like I, you know, I just egregious. You know, you see stuff in football that happens quick. That was like not within the framework of the game. You know, any
It
more than
was
Juan Marichal throwing bats, right? You know what I mean?
brutal, but since that era, like for the Phillies, was officially over by that point, I could sign on to Chase Utley, and I will admit that I was on his side with that play just because, you know, it's Chase Utley. The guy gave me my first championship. I was born 2 weeks after the 76ers won in 1983. So my life Actually, the first idea I had for a book back then, I was 22, 23, was to write a book on Philadelphia sports failure because we were coming up on 25 years. And then the Phillies won the World Series, and I was like, ah, shoot, I got to come up with another idea for a book because now it's they ruined everything that I mean, it's the greatest moment of my life, but they just ruined my whole book deal thing. So I had signed a contract for it and everything, and I had to start from scratch. But yeah, that was
Oh,
those
Stark made some
guys.
money on his book after that one.
Oh, those guys for that team, they're immortal for me. Cole Hamels, Ryan Howard, Chase Utley, Jason Worth,
Ryan Howard
Shane
was rude to
Victorino.
my wife at the Super Bowl, so like, F Ryan Howard. That's how I feel about
I
him. And Utley, we've already
got you.
been through, but you know, like, I was a Philly fanatic. This guy's a Philly fanatic. Kevin Reavy is my guest. That's Reavy, along with Jack Fritz, wrote a book called Ring the Bell: How the Philadelphia Phillies Built Baseball's Best Fan Base. I think you might get an argument on best fan base one way or another. I always think best fan base would be, are you buying tickets when you're not winning? I'm a little bit of a closet Padres fan because my aunt lived out there and they were the other National League team that I followed 30 years ago, and Tony Gwynn and all that. I only have a few jerseys in my closet. I got a Cesar Lescano Phillies jersey. I got a Tony Gwynn. I have some Aparicio stuff, obviously some old White Sox stuff and whatnot. I loved the Phillies as a kid. I still love the fanatic. I haven't in the modern era. I'm not a Phillies fan. I mean, one of my dear friends is a Phillies fan. She was on my couch eating cheesesteaks and eating pretzels when the Phillies won the first World Series 20 years ago, and crying and sobbing. I didn't have any of that emotion about the Phillies. But I think for anyone that's younger like you, and you're half a generation behind me, the Phillies have sort of captured this sort of tough image for Philadelphia to allow you to write a book full of memories about Ring the Bell. Tell me about the book and why. Well, the Orioles fans, I don't know. Maybe you want to become an a Philly. All you got to do is drive up, like, over the bridge at Conowingo to Elkton, Rising Sun, Lancaster, where I'm going up to Bethlehem. It's all Phillies fans. I mean, Delaware, I see him down at Dewey Beach last week. Let's see Tommy Cromwell last week down at Dewey. It's all Phillies. And proudly, you might wear an Eagles hat because they won a Super Bowl, but the bubble P and the P, it just looks good. You know what I mean? Like, it just looks good. I think.
Yeah, I live in Lancaster County right now, so it extends far out here, and all the time, people saying "Go Birds, go Phillies." It's a whole. It extends very far and wide, so we welcome all comers. But yeah, it's kind of funny you bring up baseball's best fan base. So I think people get the wrong idea about the book that it's some sort of fan book, but really, we needed a subtitle, and they rejected the first like six we gave them, and we ended up with it, this one. And it's got a lot of B's in it. Built baseball's best fan base. It's not perfect, but the idea for the book basically is. If you're alive now and you're a Phillies fan, you had moments in your life that you connect to. And we wanted to put that in the book. So we start with 1964 because if you remember the World Series team in 1950, you're probably extremely old and we're not targeting the 95 and up demographic. So we start at 1964, and it's fun to start with a season where they just tragically just fell apart. I think it's kind of fun to start a story with like
Epic
the worst
failure.
of times.
Yeah,
Yes.
epic failure.
And then we just go from there. Everybody has their team that they kind of relate to. Mine was 93. I was 9 years old when that season started. By the end, I had the full range of experience of being a Philadelphia sports fans, the highs and lows. I
Remember
became a
when
Philly
Danny
sports
Jackson
fan that
ripped his
year.
shirt
Oh
off?
yeah. It
I
was the
have that
best.
shirt. Yeah.
And as a kid, as a young kid, being into like
I was in the
WWF,
locker room.
it's awesome. I was excited. I was posting things on my wall from the newspaper. It was the greatest summer, and then it ended with me crying in my mom's arms as Mitch Williams gave up that home run to Joe
Well,
Carter.
Schilling winning game
And that's the full
five was
experience.
unbelievable that night.
One of the
And then I
greatest.
got in the car and drove up to Toronto for game six. And then it got late and Mitch Williams and all that. But dude, I have such great memories. I mean, Madonna played over at the Spectrum the night of game three, and there was a rain delay. And then there was a crazy 18-16 game or whatever it was.
Right.
I mean, just. That was a great week in my life. You know what I mean? Like the World 93 World Series with the Phillies was, I mean, baseball was awesome then. It really was. And Camden Yards
Was
was new, and
wild.
Cal Ripken, and the baseball strike hadn't happened yet, and just a different, vibe. But it gets you, right? Like you wrote a book about this because it's defined your life now. It's been Luke always says two things he's had in life when Hulk Hogan died last week, and he's your age, born the same year you were born, is I had wrestling and I had baseball. It's the only thing I've had my whole life other than God and my family.
That was pretty much the same for me. I was a big wrestling fan as I was a kid. But it's funny, like as I grew up, I always thought that was for kids. I remember being like 15 years old, I guess, when like The Rock and all those guys came in. And there's kids older than me talking about watching wrestling. And I was like, aren't you a little too old for that? Like, I thought you gave that up at like 12 or 13. But I mean, that blew into something
Dude, I saw the
I
Savannah
couldn't have
Bananas come
anticipated.
in here this weekend and sell 100,000 tickets, and the Orioles can't get anybody to come see Gunnar Henderson play. They can't get anybody to
I
see
know.
Shohei Ohtani play when he comes in.
And the
So it's like,
bananas are crazy. I got a bananas hat, of course. You know, any minor league or minor league adjacent thing that has food on their hat, I have to get. But yeah, I tried to get tickets to a game when I was in Savannah a couple years ago, and it was right before they really blew up. But even then, just for a regular game down there, it was like $100 for the cheap seats, and I just couldn't pull the trigger on it. But that's been a wild thing, and I fully support it. People talk about how it's kind of clowns on baseball, but you know, the Harlem Globetrotters have been around forever. They can be two separate things.
but
We're
you
allowed
mentioned
to like
Built for
baseball and
Kids,
fake
like
baseball.
there were a lot of kids at the party. That's great and all that, but it doesn't feel like it's for me, and it's probably not,
Right.
as I learned this weekend when I got shouted down by everybody for being a
Okay.
killjoy. And I'm like, I'm not pooping on it. I'm just like, I
Right.
don't like country music, dude. Go have a good time. I'm not going. You know what I mean? Like, that's
I
that.
didn't like country music until I was forced to listen to it all day, every day. And it was during the Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy days. It
Oh,
was like
God.
when country music kind of became a little bit more rock. And I was like, okay, I can get behind it.
If there's
But
a hell, that's it for me. Don't
I
do it.
think my time with country music came and went. So now I'm back to my, you know, Eric Clapton roots and all that kind of stuff.
Attaboy,
So.
attaboy, get right. Kevin Reavy is here. The book is Ring the Bell. Not exclusively for Phillies fans, but you'll probably enjoy it more if you are. Tell everybody what the book's about and why they're going to get it.
Yeah, so I mean, primarily if you're a Phillies fan, there's going to be tons of stories in here that you connect with. Maybe, you know, if you're on the younger side, your parents, grandparents, you might be able to connect with them a little bit more to hear these stories about the best teams and moments in the team's history. And, you know, we have perspectives. We talk to everybody for this book, and there might be a moment you remember, but you didn't have the full story. So we try to give the full story. My favorite chapter in here is about the Fanatic. We talked to Tom Burgoyne, who's the Fanatic right now, has been doing it for 30 plus years. And it's, I think we come at it from an interesting perspective and get inside what that mascot means to the team, means to baseball, means to sports. And it's basically embodies the theme of the book is, you know, if we're going to be Philly positive here, it's about good vibes, like good times, and nothing embodies that more than the Philly Fanatic. And I think, you know, if you're looking for a book that just really bleeds good time baseball, it's our book, Ring the Bell.
Dude, I gotta share this with you because I can't even like I'm just like I'm such a fanatic guy. We had the Fanatic in the upper deck. We sold like a couple thousand tickets. This is like 20 years ago, back when the Orioles liked me. You can see I even had a press pass, so you know it's fake. I'm wearing my Albert Bell jersey, so you know it's good. Good times with the Philly Fanatic and Wild Bill. They're in with the Fanatic and the Bird in the upper deck at Camden Yards. Era gone by, but I even
That's
put
great.
up my picture. It's on the front of Baltimore Positive right now. You can see it. It's from my Pentax 105 camera in 1983 of the Bird and the Fanatic at Memorial Stadium at second base, dueling before game one of the 1983 World Series. You were barely on the planet, right? You were a little baby, right?
That's correct. Yeah, it was June 12th, 1983.
Do you
So.
get the Baltimore thing? You don't have no, you're not offended at all by Baltimore, probably more by the Ravens from time to time. But like, do you come down to Camden Yards? Have you seen the Phillies play down here? Like, do you have any Baltimore? Because the reason I'm bringing you on is the last place Baltimore Orioles under heavy rebuild or headed to Philadelphia to maybe get their ass kicked for a couple of days, or maybe play the role of spoiler on Broad Street. They don't play on Broad anymore. They sort of play on Patterson. But for you with Baltimore, no, just a place to get a crab cake or something.
I've been once and I was super impressed by the place. It was gosh, I want to say 5 years ago now, maybe six. It was the last game of the season. It might have been the year where they lost a tremendous amount of games, the
120,
Orioles.
yeah.
And
We call that the Rio Ruiz era here, is what we call that.
we had gone, actually, me and my co-author at the time, for when we wrote Incredible Baseball Stats, Ryan Spader, we were invited by Lance McCullers of the Astros. It was their final game of the season out there. So, I got on the field during batting practice, and we were Astros fans that day. And I was wearing my Nolan Ryan jersey. I'm a big time Nolan Ryan fan.
Did
I guess
just
I've always
sunburst
been
proper.
old. Oh yeah, for sure.
Like it.
It's
Okay, I
great.
like it.
And we were Astros fans that day. So I haven't seen the Phillies play out there. I took a look at the Father's Day game last year, and again, the sticker shock was brutal. But it would have been nice to be out
Was
there
all you
last
Phillies
season.
fans keep making the prices high, is what it was.
Yep.
Really,
It's
it
a beautiful
was.
stadium. It's a great time. I love how stadiums, when they can include the city into the experience, like we're like the outside businesses seem part of the experience. Kind of the same thing with Boston. Yeah, I love Camden Yards. I want to go back, and I'm just, I'm waiting for that opportunity. And it's tough with a 2-year-old, and I live in Lancaster, and it seems like I guess with me being in Lancaster, it should be a little bit easier,
I
but
want to be fair to you in that I am friendly fire here. See, this is my there's my sixth Lescano jersey. I did 30 ballparks in 30 days for the bone marrow registry, and we actually swabbed over at the bar in the, in the center of that Comcast Xfinity thing over there. My wife and I did the morning show up there. There's my original Richie Ashburn 1981 bubble P hat. I still
that's
have that
great.
hat. Yep. See, so we've been around a little bit long enough to, respect you guys up there. And I listen, I would always touch the Rocky statue when I parked in the Spectrum lot to walk across to go to the vet, to see football games, to see baseball games. So I was even at Live Aid. I did an hour and a half on Live Aid, 40th anniversary a couple weeks ago at JFK. So you're not the only one that considers that whole area there sort of holy sacred ground at different points,
Yeah, and I mean, I love Baltimore. I've been to Baltimore a million times. It's a little bit easier with where I live now. One of my best friends, he was in my wedding. He manages Brandon Novak, a famous Baltimore resident from Jackass. And I love going there whenever I can. It's shocking I've only been to one Orioles game, but I'd like to change that. I got nothing against Baltimore. I love
They
the
better
city.
figure out a way to lure you down here playing better baseball. You got better baseball up there right now,
Yeah, it's strange. I think, we were talking about how everything has to kind of come together, but Baltimore has one of those towns and one of those fan bases that if they could just put it together, put a good team on the field, and it takes more than one season. You know that probably more than most. It takes more than one season. It's a culture that you have to create. And if Baltimore can get that going, I think everything is there to have the same sort of situation we have in Philly.
Well, I mean, yeah, I can't disagree with that. Having sat here for 30 years waiting for the new
Yeah.
owners, waiting for the off season, they've ripped it down kind of sort of again. And I guess where the rubber meets the road, by the way, Kevin Reavy, we're going to say goodbye to him in a minute here. He's written a book about the Phillies called Ring the Bell. But I had Micah Buchdahl on, my buddy who's a Phillies guy, but grew up here in Baltimore and worked in the industry. He said the reason he's a Phillies fan and an Eagles fan is because the ownerships try and they care and they're in and the fans are in and the heartbeat for sports never stops in Philadelphia. And that is what powers the expectation that not, no, the demand of the fan base to say, you're not going to be like the old Cats guy with the 76ers and not really trying to win because I'm not going to support that. If you're not trying to win, I'm not going to support it. And the Phillies ownership knows that. The Phillies fan base knows that. Their sponsors, everyone in the community knows we're going to try to win a championship. And the minute that that stops, you become the Pirates, right? I mean, like literally, you
Right.
become something less than the money you're already going to make being a billionaire off of owning this team. And we've gone through that here. We have a new owner here. His first act was to make a bobblehead of himself. So, yeah, you're laughing out
Yeah.
loud. Like, how can that? anything that happens after that's probably not going to be good here. So I'm holding on to the rails with a 74-year-old billionaire owner, hoping he spends some money so we can have some of this passion that you speak of, because I built a whole life in a radio station around this, you know. So I
Oh,
love
yeah.
baseball, even though I don't love the bananas. Sorry, kids, Nanners. I want the Orioles to do well, and it was fun talking baseball with you, man. Keep up
It's
the good
great.
work and writing books and all that good stuff, and keep up your fandom and get down here, get a proper crab cake, Kevin Reeve. All right.
Can't wait. Be down there
Ring
soon.
the Bell is the name of the book. You can find it at an Amazon. How the Philadelphia Phillies built baseball's best fan base. I'll probably feel that way when I'm walking around the boardwalk in Ocean City next week and seeing Philadelphia stuff everywhere in Ocean City, Maryland. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the road. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Our friends at Curio Wellness are sponsoring our 27th anniversary, as well as GBMC, getting us out on the road. We're talking about men's health issues a lot in the coming months here, including I've got to get a checkup and a colonoscopy. But it's all brought to you by our friends at GBMC because they want to keep me alive to continue talking about sports and other things, including our 27th anniversary, where we're going to be getting out and talking to folks and eating crab cakes all month long. My 27 favorite things to eat all month long. Who knew? The first thing's a Philly pretzel factory pretzel because I'm a very simple man. It's like Lynyrd Skynyrd. We're Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.